Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show, the Wednesday edition of the show. Today got me off, caught me off guard because today's Wednesday, or today, recording this Tuesday, but it's really the Wednesday show, but we didn't have a show Monday, and we didn't have a show Tuesday. Either way, great guest for us today, Chris Manning with Locked On Cavs, also covers the Grizzlies for Forbes Sports. So, Chris, I appreciate you joining me.
No, man, it's good to be on. It's good to, for me, this is a pleasure because I get to talk about like a competent organization, and it's a good like salve for talking about the Cavs and writing about the Cavs most of the time.
Yeah, the Cavs, just in the news today, obviously moving away from Beeline and hiring our old friend JB Bickerstaff, which Chris and I are going to talk about for Locked On Cavs. If you guys want to hear us talk about that, you can check that out as well. But I first want to talk to you about let's just start with the Grizzlies trade deadline. That's obviously a lot had happened over the last 2 weeks with them, and now that the trade deadline has passed and they get into All-Star break, what were your general just thoughts on the deadline? I know that a lot of people outside of Memphis did not like the trade at all. A lot of national writers gave them, I guess, quote-unquote bad grades. A lot of the guys or people that I talked to in the city, or the people that cover the Grizzlies in the city, you know, they generally thought it was a pretty decent deal after speaking with some of the front office members and Zach Kleiman, the GM, and all that stuff. What was your thought on what they did to get Justice Winslow, also Brandon Gorchie-Jang, and then the waiving Dion Waiters?
Well, for the content, for the jokes, for the possibility of buying a Deion Waiters like throwback jersey that we're all losers, you know, if one exists, I hope like someone wears it or like owns it, and I would like to buy it from you. But in all seriousness, I could get why there is some trepidation with this, right? Like I think Justice Winslow is really good. He obviously really flourished in a specific role with the Heat last year, and the injury concern is real. Like I guess in my head when I first thought I know he has this back injury, but I forgot about some of the other stuff he dealt with. But I think basketball commentary in general now is like gets a little guilty, and I certainly have been guilty of this. I think that we get guilty in thinking just about like cap space and like maximizing flexibility and assets and stuff. And I think like if Zach Kleiman and the Memphis brain trust looks at Justice Winslow, who's like not really making that much money, and you can go get him, and you feel like, okay, this guy is really going to help us the next couple of years, maybe 3 years. We have a team, you have a team option on him for that third year, 2.5 seasons, to get him back this year. He fits with Ja, he fits with Jaren Jackson, he fits with the other young guys we have. Like, why not get him? You know, like that's, and right. I think if you're looking at having cap space next summer, it's like, okay, would you rather spend your money on Justice Winslow and like bet on his talent, bet on what he did with the Heat last year when he was healthy, or bet on like trying to find a useful player in what is a pretty weak free agency class? Like, I would rather take Justice Winslow and bet on what he can be, bet that he's going to fit in what Taylor Jenkins is doing, bet that he's going to help Ja. He's going to make the offense kind of more harder to guard because he can handle the ball. He may be, you can lead some bench units if that's a way to kind of maximize them. I think it's just a really interesting piece. I don't see like a ton of downside. Obviously, the injuries are a concern. You know, if that becomes a problem, that's something you have to really contend with. And that's sort of the unknowable question in this. Gorgie is like, I think, you know, it's obviously a little less ideal just because you already have Jonas Valanciunas. You obviously have Brandon Clark, who like you would like to play as many minutes as possible. And I'm curious to see how, over the rest of the season, that sort of manifests itself in terms of what they're doing. But, you know, those, I think overall those moves, and then, you know, signing Dylan Brooks to, I think, what is a pretty good contract around that same time. I think a pretty, I really, really like the deadline for Memphis. I don't really get it being something that people are super down on. Like, I don't really see like a ton of downside in terms of what they did.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we actually asked Zach about Jane playing and the five, and they said that it would not take away from what they're trying to do with Jaren playing the center, you know, and Brennan playing some small ball stuff as well. So that was actually a question in the media scrum for Zach about that particular move. But with Dylan, yeah, you're, I mean, I don't – Dylan was getting paid. I don't know, yeah. Honestly. Like, I don't know what people thought was going to happen. And I said this on my show, like, time and time again. Like, for a guy that can is a skill that is hard to come by and score the basketball in this league at that position, you know, like, you're gonna make money. And I think it was a no-brainer for them to lock him up at that amount of money. Honestly, I was surprised that Dylan went for it. I mean, I get the guarantee part of it, but I assumed you'd wait. I mean, I think, you know, you're getting somewhere around 15 in the summer. I mean, I get there's not a lot of people that can have that, you know, have that kind of space to spend, but like, I still think you're getting that money in the summer. So I thought it was great for them to lock him up at that particular number, given all this happened and how well he's played.
Yeah. And I think too, it's like, maybe the, I mean, there's not a lot of teams. You're right. There's not a lot of teams that can theoretically have cap space in the summer. It's like Atlanta, Detroit now, you know, the Knicks, the Hornets. Also, I wonder if there's just something he looks at this and it would make sense to me if he decided to do this. He looks at what they have there and it's, you know, Ja, it's a star, like clearly a guy who's surging and has been incredible this year in Ja. Jaren Jackson Jr., who's very good. Brandon Clark, a system that really fits him, a coach that really fits him. And I wonder if he just looks at that and is like, that's what I want. That to me would make a lot of sense. You know, I mean, it's just, you can see guys go to like teams and it doesn't work for them, but and they get a little more money, but like, it doesn't mean the length of their career isn't the same. And if Dylan Brooks is like, okay, like I fit with this perfect, this is where I fit. I want to play with a guy the caliber of John Moran and a guy the caliber of Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, why not just stick around? It's like, and for, again, for Memphis, like him being a rotation piece, making like $11 million the next, like 11.4, I think it starts out at, and then goes up above 12, then back down. Like, that's a bargain for a guy that you view as a rotation piece. Like, that's really, really good. And you know, once the Dane contract comes off or whatever happens there or whatever, so if they do, like, Josh still pretty cheap. Jaren Jackson still pretty cheap. Brandon Clark is an absolute bargain. Like, you still have money to play with. Like, it's not, and it's not like, again, it's not like Justice Winslow is making that much money either. Like, $13 million, if he's healthy and good, is like pretty like reasonable money for a guy that could be like your third best player on your team if everything breaks right for him.
Yeah, if he's healthy, it's always a caveat that you have to throw in there with Justice. For you, I struggle with back injuries. You know, like, I don't think it's that big a deal. I think because it's Justice has not had, like, it's not Chandler Parsons where he just doesn't have good knees, and like, everybody knows that. It is, you know, different things that have just, it's almost seems like bad luck than anything else. Does that injury scare you for Justice at all? Or do you just, I mean, for me, I think it's just, it seems like bad luck. It doesn't seem like something that is a nagging that he can't get to go away.
Yeah, I think you might have seen something I didn't, but it seems like he doesn't know exactly when he's going to debut.
They don't. No one knows. It's more like weeks than it is days. I put it like that.
Right. So I think there's some frustration. I would get in the short term if there's frustration with that, because you're seeing a team that is unexpectedly making a push for a playoff seed. You traded off guys that, like, while they weren't part of your core, like Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill were guys that were like playing minutes or contributing. Were not like, you're not replacing them one for one. If you're just like, you're giving more minutes to like Josh Jackson or like trying some other stuff. Like, maybe you're like, Gugurich gets back in the rotation, or like you call up a guy in a two-way or just do something to like fill those minutes, and you're probably not going to get the same kind of production. Right. Maybe you're seeing more two big lineups. Like, that's the other thing. It's just like, maybe you're seeing Dang and Clark, which is like a little more cramped. Even though Clark can kind of shoot it, but you look at not having Winslow there, like, okay, that's going to impact things. But I think, you know, I think if you're Memphis, like, I would 100% like get the push, if I were, if I were them and I was a fan, and if I were a fan of that team, or if I was even like a player on the team, I would want to be just trying to make that 8 seed, make the most of this season. Like there's not really any harm in it because of the draft pick stuff they have coming. Like, why not? You know? And it's like, right. Just go for it. Not having him certainly impacts that. But I think if you're the brain trust of that and you're thinking, okay, like this, you're not going to win the title this year anyway. You're not going to unless things just went absolutely bonkers, like you're not going to win the title. Maybe you get to, playoff experience, I think, is good. But you think about the long term and you think about getting him healthy and just like making getting at least some games in for him. That matters more than him being there. But I would get there being frustration and sort of some skepticism if you don't exactly know when he's coming back. And back injuries like can be debilitating. Like even if it isn't Chandler Parsons, like mobility stuff, and his ability to like just be healthy with that can be a nagging thing. And that's something that's in Cleveland has like bothered Kevin Love in the past, and it hasn't, kept him out for like as maybe as much time as this. He's had other injuries that have done that, but it is something that he just has to spend time kind of monitoring. And if it's an ongoing thing, that just has to be something where he has to find a way to kind of make that work. And you figure out how he can just be managed without, re-aggravating that, if that's something that they have to monitor going forward. But that's just really like a noble question with this. And maybe that's where some of the trepidation for people for this deal comes in. I don't know how, like, if you'd agree with it or not, but that it just feels like it's just one of those things you don't know until you get this season and like maybe half of next season and see how many games he actually plays.
No, I think you're probably, I agree with that. I mean, and I always had this running joke that, and I can't remember who was one of the draft picks I was talking about, but it was like, hey, have you ever, how many people do you meet that used to have a back injury? Like that no longer exist,
yeah.
There's not a whole lot of those people. They're like, oh yeah, I had this nagging back injury a long time ago, but it's gone now. That is a little bit like, not suspect, but it is a little bit, scary in the sense that this could be something that lingers. But at the same time, on the other hand, De'Anthony Melton had almost the same injury earlier in the year, and it took him this was training camp that we found out he had that injury, and they held him out, and I think it was 7 weeks where he was out, maybe a little bit more, and then he finally got in the rotation, and you've seen, obviously, it's a different player, obviously different body, so you can't really compare, but in terms of the way they approach his injury, and what I have heard and what I've talked is that, they are going to get him better. And they are in no rush to put him on that court. And, they were going to let him just sit and just recover from the recovery. Even if you're healthy, just sit there and you just hang out and you just get better. And then after that, you still have to work. They still want him to work his minutes up until where you're actually playing, high speed contact basketball. So, it is going to be a bit, but at the same time, this front office has shown with other injuries and along the same lines and other people that they are in no rush to get their players back. They are very cautious in terms of what they're asking them to do on a nightly basis. So that's kind of, I see both sides of it. What I don't see is the cap space issue. Like if you decide you're not going to be in the free agency class this summer, then who cares? Like, who cares about having the cap space for Jing and what was once the great career of Dion Waiters? I mean, I would have liked for them to hold on to Dion Waiters till the summer. I don't get them waiving him right now. But if you decide you're just out on this free agency class, then who cares? Like, I don't get the blowback about not having money to sign. Like, who are you really going to sign? Like, if you try to sign Joe Harris, they're just going to match. Or you can't sign Brandon Ingram because he's going to get maxed out. Like, who are you really going to sign this summer?
Yeah, I'm like looking at a list of free agents right now, and it's like, okay, like Paul Millsap makes no sense for them. Andre Drummond makes literally no sense for them. Like someone like Nick Batum or like all these other guys. Like there's just a bunch of guys that I'm just like, why? Like why? Like guys that are coming off back contracts that aren't very good anymore. Like Brandon Knight is a guy like that. Like who cares?
Yeah.
Like what is the point of this? And like yeah, if you're gonna get a good free agent signing, it's like. I think Melton, I believe, is like restricted already because he was a second round pick. So like you're gonna have money going his way, like, and he's clearly more valuable than a lot of the guys you're gonna get. You already have bigs, like you're not gonna be a team that wants to spend on Montrezl Harrell or anything like that. yeah, like I don't, you could probably get, and if you want to go get like a veteran wing to kind of like offer some depth there, like, you know, you could probably get Ken Bazemore cheap, or you could get, if Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't opt in, like you could get someone like that, or pick a guy like Courtney Lee, or even he's older, or like whomever, you can go get guys and just find them on a cheap deal and like not have to worry about, like, there's not anyone that you would want to be spending a bunch of money anyway. Like, I'd rather have Justice Winslow and bet on him being like a part of your core than, you know, give a guy a big 1 year deal just because you have cap space. Like I'd rather do what you did. And like Deng's useless either. You know, it's not like he's a completely worthless player. Like I wonder how many minutes he actually gets. And like, obviously he's overpaid. It's so funny that he's the highest paid player on their team. After Iguodala was the highest paid player on the team. That's just like a really funny, like little quirk of those guys' contracts. But it's just like, you know, it's not really any harm there to me.
It really, you know, we see Deng play one game, you know, and he's a good player. I mean, he is a good defensive center, and that's exactly what they needed on their backup, in their backup reserve role. And I mean, they actively sought out him. So it's not like he's useless. And like you mentioned, and he's better than Andre Iguodala, who frankly wasn't even here at all and never came to this city. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk more with Chris Manning. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs. He also covers the Grizzlies for Forbes Sports. So if you need extra Grizzly stuff, he sometimes writes about it over there. Go check that out as well. You know, I want to pick up a little bit where we left off. But first, what is your thoughts on Ja Morant this year? From the outside looking in, I know obviously it's the Grizzlies fans, and I myself have never had a player like Ja Morant who on a nightly basis, it does things that you just, it's hard to believe that he does. And even when you go talk to him after the game, he literally can tell you exactly what he was thinking every minute of whatever play you ask him about it. And he breaks it down ridiculously well. What are your thoughts on Ja Morant so far from the out, kind of not being from the city? And just in terms of what has, I guess, impressed you the most? There's so many things that have surprised me, but what has, I guess, have impressed you the most about him?
I still, number one, I don't think there's a young player that I have more fun watching. Like, the guy is just electric every time you see him play. He's just going for it. It has translated. And, like, I just, you know, I didn't know if, like, him coming from where he came from at Murray State to this was, like, possible, but it clearly is, and he's just incredible. Like, I just can't imagine, even though, like, Zion is back and everything, like, I can't imagine he doesn't win Rookie of the Year. That just feels like crazy. Like, the body of work is just so unreal. I think a lot about it. I think, number one, if there's a moment that still sticks in my mind that where I was just sold, it was just very early in the year they playing the Nets, and it's when he, I believe, stopped Kyrie. And then, like I said, I think it was either this game or another game, but he threw a pass and like he set up the winning shot. He didn't like force it. He like found Jay Crowder, I think, and like set that up. I don't know if those were the same game, but I just remember that
same game.
Okay. Yeah. So my brain does work somewhat, but the Kyrie stop to me was just, I was like, oh my God, like this is amazing. Cause he was on an island with Kyrie freaking Irving, and like, whatever jokes. And like, there's a lot of very good jokes about Kyrie. Particularly now that he's like in the union, like higher up in the union, it's incredible. It's just amazing. Like what the jokes it provides him doing that. And like, just having the composure to do that just rules. Like, the numbers and everything speak for themselves, but like I look a lot at him and I compare him to, like, obviously I think it's a better coach. I think it's a system that makes much more sense. I think the roster is overall better and kind of fits him better. But I look at like I compare him to, when I think about him, just because I think about the Cavs so much and cover them, I look at Garland and I look at Sexton, I compare him to Ja, and like, obviously he's a better prospect. And I think that was sort of the assumption, but you look at like how a guy like that can transform a team, energize a fan base, energize an organization, energize a city, and like what that can do and what he's just unlocked for them. It's just incredible. And like, I came into the year sort of thinking, okay, like he might end up being the most fun guy in this team. But I think Jaren Jackson Jr. probably ends up becoming, or like this year would be the best guy on the team. It's a little takey, and it's a little like we need to kind of see how things kind of develop still, because our guys are so young still. But like, I feel like this is already Ja's team, and it's just like so fun to watch a guy be that. And there's, again, there's no player like that is that like a rookie second year guy, third year guy that I think I have more fun watching than Ja, because he's just fearless and he's never not like ready to go. And there's just something really, really, really fun about that. And it's just like, I don't think there's nothing not to like about him, right? Like I don't think there's like a negative thing I would really say about what he's doing right now.
It's funny you say that because it is 100% Ja Morant's team. Like, and if you know the personalities of Jaren, and Jaren is just not, he's such a fun guy and like he's such a funny kid and just he's so relaxed and so laid back all the time. And he's just not that guy in terms of, I wouldn't say in terms of taking over, but just personality wise, like Ja Morant is like, has this super killer, like he wants to embarrass you on the court at all times, which I think is awesome. And it's fun to watch because he tries to embarrass James Harden. He tries to embarrass all these like superstars in a league. Like he doesn't care who you are. Like he wants to embarrass every single person on the court at any time. And like, that's just not Jaren, like just not his personality. Like he's a really good player. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying, but his personality wise just doesn't lend him to be like, I think he would rather be a Robin than a Batman. And I think Ja Morant would rather be the Batman. And so I think it really, like those two together work so well in terms of personality and in terms of just how good they are. Like once you go out and see what they're able to do, especially once they started to get more pick and roll action, it's just hard to guard now with Jaren's shot that has developed this year that, you know, really was probably always there, but really pushed more in its offense. Once that's out there, it's like you put them in a pick and roll and you have to guard Jaren because he can shoot. You also have such a good job because he can drive. So like there's just so many different combinations you can do with those two. And then you still have, you got Brandon Clark out there and D'Anthony Melton. Like the roster that they have has been overhauled tremendously in a matter of 6 months. And they're all on great deal, rookie deals. And it really is insane.
Yeah. I think the other thing I really like about this too, with Ja, is I feel like he, with Taylor Jenkins and just like what they're trying to build and sort of a Budenholzer-esque thing with a lot of threes and spacing and just like encouraging him to be his best self. I just love that like he ended up there. Like, I think I can't say I watch a ton of the Bulls because I guess I value my free time more, but like,
I would, yeah. Yeah.
I just like imagine like if how sucky, I mean, even like if he ended up on the Caps, like I think it would suck if Ja Morant was in a not fun situation and he comes into this coach who's like, okay, let's space the floor. Let's like, let you be yourself. Let's like, just let's be like what we should be and like leans into that. And that's really, really great. And like, again, it would suck if we had Ja Morant and he was in a place that was like not letting him be himself. And like, it would, because the stuff you're seeing is just like, okay, like, yes, like the talent ultimately wins out a lot of the time with these things. Like, guys can still be really fun in bad situations. Like that was the Kyrie Irving thing for a long time in Cleveland. But with Ja, it's like, he's with this coach who's just like, okay, like I get this. I get how to design an offense for the modern NBA. Like I get how to unlock this guy that we know is great. And, it makes, like when looking back, it makes all the sense in the world that like the moment, like, obviously, they get number two, and, like, they know the Zions. It's sort of like a non-Zion draft, and it was, like, it may have been, like, a week or 2 weeks, or it was, like, very quickly after the lottery that it was, like, okay, like, they're taking Ja Morant. Like, RJ Barrett's not in the discussion. None of these other guys are in the discussion. Like, they knew it seemed like they just knew what they had and, like, knew what he could bring to this team, and it's like, just kind of great, and it's just one of, I think, the very, very best stories. I'm going to ask you this, though. Obviously, there's like, you guys come out of the Memphis market that comes out of this great era of grit and grind. And like this, obviously, maybe that's not the most like aesthetic. That wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing basketball. I love Z-Bo and everything, like Treasure, Tony Allen, everything like that. But like, is there a different level of like fun or a different level of like excitement that for people that have been watching this team like intently for like the last 10 years or whatever, like, with Ja, with Jaren, and like with what this kind of brand of Grizzlies basketball sort of looks like?
I think most people would tell you this is more fun. I literally have a 10-foot Zach Randolph banner that they sold at a yard sale from the Grizzlies from the venue hanging in my office. Like, I love Z-Bo, one of my favorite players of all time. And And that brand of basketball was fun to watch because it was bully basketball. It was, you know, we don't take no shit from anybody kind of thing. It was fun, you know, like, but the way that Ja Morant and this offense is designed, I mean, it's just faster pace. It's just up and down basketball. It's alley-oops. It's awesome dunks. I mean, there's just so much more probably to like about this offense and this team in terms of just the style of play. I think most people would agree. I think most people would probably tell you this is more fun to watch. And not this, and I tell people all the time, it's not that there's anything wrong with that. And it's just different and it can be more fun. And while also recognizing the fact that that was also fun, like it doesn't have to be this thing where cause we've had this conversation and discussion in kind of this small bubble of Grizzlies Twitter and Grizzlies people, you know, that watch these games is that, you know, it has to be one or the other. And it doesn't have to be one or the other. I tell people all the time, it can be both. Like you can have a 10-foot picture of Zebo and still, you know, love Ja Morant all of 6 months into his NBA career. So like, I think most people would probably agree with that in terms of the way it's watched and the way they play and just seeing the potential of this team. I think that's what gets people more excited than anything else is you can see the potential of Ja Morant. Obviously it's already playing out in front of you, but you can let yourself dream about, okay, well, they're going to bring back, obviously have D'Anthony Melton back and Brandon Clark and then Jaren and Ja. And then what happens if Justice Winslow comes? Like, what happens if this? I mean, there are ways you can – there's a path forward out of this team that was mired by our front office for a decade that was just awful. And all of a sudden you have a front office come in the last 6 months and make it amazing. And it's like, okay – this is different, you know, like this is weird, but I'll take it. Like it is a definitely a different feeling. I think most people probably agree with that.
I can't even imagine the Pelicans obviously come to mind. I can't really think of many other situations where like that, if I was any NBA fan that I would feel more like into and encouraged by and just like betting on than this Grizzlies team. And obviously there's going to be stuff that like doesn't work out. Like there's going to like progress isn't linear. There will be some bumps in the road and everything like that. But like there's no reason like not to feel really, really good about this. And that's, I can't imagine like if you, which we'll talk about like the Cavs, like if the Bickerstaff era for the Grizzlies was like tough for people or like, you know, just the not having Ja, like, and not having a guy that you can just like it's so fun to watch a team when like a guy just carries it in a way. And like you watch the Grizzlies and it's like, that's that guy. And it is like really, really, like really, really, like he probably wouldn't win the award, I would imagine, but it's like Zach Kleiman has to be probably a top three candidate for executive of the year, considering like the way he's absolutely built out that roster, you know, like it's just really, it's a, for what he did and just taking on guys that were maybe undervalued or, you know, just getting like to eat Josh Jackson, like, and eat that money off the Suns and to get a guy who like should be part of your rotation in the next like couple of years at the very least. Like that's just like really good work. And like more GMs should try to do stuff like that. Like that's what moves obviously don't exist all the time, but like, he just was like, okay, here's a team that's going to panic and I'm going to get something of value from them. And it fits what we're going to do. And like, that's just really smart. And it's just cool. It's really, when you compare it to like other teams that have drafted high lately and everything, it's really just like awesome to see a team that is like, okay, we sort of know what we are and like build that way. And with around our two tentpoles, like we know how to build around this and then we're just going to do it and bet on it. And it's worked so far.
This is everybody's reminder, listeners to the show. Zach Kleiman got paid to take D'Anthony Melton, 2 second round picks away from the Suns, and Josh Jackson, who is now playing in the rotation for the Grizzlies. So if that's not good, I don't know what is. And yeah, he should absolutely 100% be in the conversation for executive of the year. I don't think he'll win it because I just don't think he will. But if he's not in the conversation, I think something wrong, because he 100% should be in that conversation. Let's take another quick break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about Taylor Jenkins coming up next. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs, also covers the Grizzlies for Forward Sports as well. You can read some of his stuff over there. Before we took a break, we mentioned that Zach Kleiman should be up for executive of the year, but someone I think should be up for the coach of the year is honestly Taylor Jenkins. Like, I know he doesn't get enough talk around this league as much as Ja Morant does, as much as Jaren Jackson does, and that's fine. But the offense that he has instilled in this on this team, and I always joke about on the show, like, if he ever gets himself like a real dead eye shooter, it's over. Like it will be over in terms of what his offense can do.
Yeah. Do you, in terms of the guys that maybe have underperformed this year, and I think there's like one, there's a couple, and like, or maybe like guys that you could see getting a chance next year, is there anyone that you feel like that could be auditioning for a rotation job for him next year? This is like kind of a tangent, but is there anyone that you look at and they're like, okay, like I think maybe next year, like it clicks for them, or is it, okay, this is maybe where we spend our money. This is maybe what we use like a draft pick on or something like that. Is there, or John Concher comes up on his two-way deal. Is there anything that you're like looking at and saying like, okay, this is like a guy that maybe could be better in that kind of role next year?
I don't think that, I'll be interested to see what Justice Winslow does.
Okay.
Because he's not necessarily a shooter. I mean, he can shoot. His shot is technically good, but it's not something that he's known for. But at the same time, that's not really something that Jaren was known for until he got with Taylor Jenkins either. So, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to be very interested to see what they do with Justice in terms of shooting the ball, because Taylor just says, look, you let it fly, shoot, don't worry about you. He never criticizes anybody for shooting shots. It's why you saw Jay Crowder take 7-8 threes a game. Because, because if he says, okay.
I know, but I think about it from the Cavs, and it's like, it was like wild, and obviously different circumstances, but it's like thinking about Jay Crowder shooting a lot of threes is like the side eyes and stuff.
Yes,
but yeah, 100%. Yeah, wild stuff.
But in terms of his offense, like in terms of what he does on the court with the players, if other players see him tell Jay Crowder not stop shooting, then that doubt enters their mind. Like he wants he wants you to shoot threes, no doubts. And so he's never going to criticize you for shooting threes. He's never really going to criticize you for turning the ball over either. I've asked him about that, you know, time and time again about the high turnovers. He didn't care. He understands that it will come with time and patience. But in terms of their like shooter, I don't think he's on the roster. I don't think he's there. I don't think they're all of a sudden. I think Dylan is. Right now, who Dylan is. I think Dylan is the sixth, seventh man in the NBA. And I love Dylan. I think he's great at making his own plays and shooting the ball. And I think he'd be able to be even better once he goes against some kind of more backups all the time. And so I think that's ultimately where Dylan ends up. And I don't think where their shooter or kind of two guard playmaker is on this roster yet. I think that's something they're going to have to go out and find next year, maybe to the draft trade, something like that. What about you?
You know, I was talking to people that knew Europe better and knew sort of like looking at his profile. I was really encouraged by Marko Gugurić, and I'm totally butchering. Yeah. I'm very sure I'm butchering his name, but like the profile of like a guy who can handle the ball a little bit and shoot and like has just like is young and kind of developed. It just hasn't worked for whatever reason. I don't know if you like have a take on like why it hasn't worked, but he's a guy that I was like really encouraged by. And he like, again, like they're paying him $2.6 million. It's not like they invested like a ton in him. So it's like, whatever, you know, you bring him back next year anyway or whatever. It's like, it doesn't really matter. I'll be curious to see like how Melton's shot kind of holds up over time. You know, I want to, if that becomes something he takes a leap at, it's like you have something really special there. Something that just fits perfectly with Ja, and you could run them together and do all kinds of stuff. But I think it probably isn't on the roster. Joe Harris would be a guy that I don't know what he wants, or like, I don't know, like, sort of how that looks. But if this summer, if that's like the one guy that if they were to spend money, and they were to like use their mid-level and like go and just get a guy who's like a young vet, that would be the guy that I would be going for. That is the guy that's just like a shooter, comes off screens, plays good defense, moves the ball. Like that's the guy that I would be wanting to spend a little bit of money on. You know, again, I don't know how realistic that is. Like, I don't know. I would imagine like he would ideally like to stay in Brooklyn or maybe go to another kind of contender type team. But like, if he were to move and he was interested, that's a guy, if I was Memphis, I would clearly want, because he's not too old where he can't help you, won't be still useful when your guys are kind of getting closer towards their peaks, but he could kind of provide something that you need right now to kind of help this team grow.
Yeah. I mean, we did a trade episode, just kind of the people who they should target. I'd always preach like, you need to go get your guy now. Like, you need to go trade for that person because it's easier to keep them under control,
right,
in terms of restricted free agency in a market like the Grizzlies are in. But Joe Harris is at the top of the list. Like, he would fit this system perfectly. And if you could get him, you'd do that. I think that I just don't. I think he's going to get more than mid level. I honestly think he's going to get more than a mid level. And but at the same time, I don't think Brooklyn's going to be able to pay him. I mean, they got a lot of people on a contract next year. Well, not a lot of people, but a lot of money, you know, for six or seven players next year. Just, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be able to be retained by Brooklyn unless he goes for the mid level, something like that. I mean, I just don't know how. I don't see a path to them re-signing him unless they do some fancy footwork in the summer. And the same with the Grizzlies. I mean, they'd have to do something. They'd have to, you know, you can always do some type of sign-in trade, which would be an expiring for Jing, I guess, but not that they're going to do that either. So, I mean, you'd have to do something with the Grizzlies if he doesn't sign for the mid-level. So it'd be interesting. But I think he's a guy, like you mentioned, it would fit this mold perfectly in terms of what the Grizzlies are trying to do. And Marco, I guess your answer, like, he just – he's just defensively he just can't be – he's just slow. Like, I love Marco. Yeah. He's a great guy. We love talking to him, but he just never could – he never got there. He was always one step behind. And it was always a question we joked about in the summer. Well, that's always the thing with, you know, European players. Can they stay with, you know, NBA, the speed? Do they adjust to that well? And he just never got it.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly, I think, is a thing. And if you have guys that are, like, kind of in his similar position, that, like, Melton is probably, like, they're probably sort of competing for similar spots in the rotation of that. And you have, like, Tyus Jones around playing guard minutes and stuff. Like, that's going to contribute to it. Yeah, I mean, what do you think of, like, he's not, this isn't exactly what he is, but do you think, I mean, they obviously declined his option, and I very much would have done the same thing. He's not worth what he was going to make next year. But is there anything to be redeemed in your mind and emphasized in Josh Jackson?
Yeah, we actually get this question a lot on our mailbag the past couple weeks. And I think that they have said that there is a path forward for Josh Jackson on this team. What that looks like, they don't know. But I think that he's a guy that I would like to see back. Obviously not on what he would been making before, but I think he provides things that you don't always have. I mean, and that's the thing about this roster now with the Grizzlies is it is so deep. I mean, there's so many different options and lineups that Taylor Jenkins can go with. And so I think Josh Jackson provides that. He's obviously not a shooter. His shot is like awful. Like, it was one of the worst shots I've seen. But I mean, he does so many different things well. The Grizzlies play so fast. He's so good in transition. Like, there's a lot of things that Josh Jackson does well that I think would be beneficial to have in the Grizzlies. So, and I think him, it's just probably all about a numbers thing. You know, what number is he going to get at? They have the biennial exception this year as well. So, like, could they get him for the biennial? I don't know, but. We'll see. I mean, it's not like anybody's out there knocking down Josh Jackson's door to give him $8 or $9 million a year. That's just not going to happen. So, like, I think they'll at least be in the driver's seat in terms of, you know, what they've asked him to do this year, and he's done, and him kind of wanting to be at this team. Like, he's talked about that, like, just wanting to be around these young guys. Like, it's just a different culture than what he's been in before. So,
yeah,
I think there's a market for that. I think it would depend on the number.
Yeah, I think your answer of Justin Winslow is probably like the best answer, but I'm also pulled up his numbers. I knew it by watching and thinking about the team, but it's like I wouldn't have guessed that Jaren Jackson Jr. went from 2.4 threes a game to 6.4. I didn't realize it was that big of a leap. That's remarkable.
Yeah, and it's all just, again, it's all that. It's the same. It's the same flow for everybody, you know. And Taylor Jenkins, it is shoot the ball. Unless you're Jonas Valanciunas, then don't shoot the ball, Jonas. But everybody else, you have free reign to shoot the ball. Like, it's even the same that Dane had. I think he had three threes in his first game. Like, that's not who he is either. But if you're open, you got to take the shot. Like, he is all about eliminating the twos, you know, and taking the threes for sure. Chris, we are over our time, man. I appreciate you coming on and join me again. If you guys are not already checking out Chris's stuff over at Four Sports, he writes something about Grizz as well. Go check that out. Locked On Cavs. If you guys want to know all about the stuff that's happening in the Cavs, I wouldn't say dumpster fire, but it's interesting. Yeah. That's for sure. We're going to talk a little bit about that as well, so you guys can hear that conversation over at Locked On Cavs. Chris, I appreciate it. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, man, it was a pleasure. It's fun to talk about an exciting, competent basketball team every once in a while.
You know what? we've all experienced the Grizzlies were bad the last couple of years. So I've been there, man.
Yeah.
It is definitely fun to talk about a combat basketball team. I appreciate it again. You guys go check out his stuff. We'll do it again soon.